I'd like to call the regular meeting of the Town Discovery Bay to order, please. Let us start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Please rise and join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Roll call has been taken, and let the record reflect that all members are present, with the exception of Director Leet.
Thank you, Sue. This is the time for public comment. If anybody in the public has, or in the audience has any comments they would like to make about items that are not agendized, then this would be the time to come to the microphone and address the board. Do I have any items? Do I have anybody, any public items that please come up?
I'm Wayne Deanna. I'm representing the Pickleball Complex Club. So what we're trying to achieve here as far as making known right now is that during the meeting where the Pickleball Complex was somewhat approved by the Town Discovery Bay, it was brought up that we wanted to do a plaque very similar to what was done in the dog park area. And so we've been making statements about a plaque coming up for people to be donating. And what we want to do is to make sure that the council is behind this concept so we don't step ourselves into a hole, get people to donate thinking they're going to be in a plaque, and then all of a sudden we have an issue. So we did up a very rough kind of artist rendering of what the plaque would kind of look like, which follows suit.
Okay.
So I don't know if you want me to bring this forward.
Well, what I would like you to do is submit that to our Park and Rec director, and he will take it to the committee, and I think we'll handle it that way, and then if it can get to the board for approval. Okay. At that point, but there's a process that we want to go through for that.
Sure.
So I would suggest you get together with Matt.
Okay.
And present that to him, and he can work that idea through our Park and Rec committee.
Okay. So we're just...
But thank you for making us aware of that.
Just to know that we're in the full swing. We've got the 501c, and we're doing a lot of things to make all this happen, but we want to make sure we're not stepping on toes. And we want to
just
cross all the T's.
Thank you. Dale, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
I'm Bob Lyman.
I'm sorry, Bob. I'm sorry.
I appreciate the recommendation. However, we have brochures printed. We're out talking to people. We were hoping that we actually talked to Matt before, he had basically said the same thing. Well, we will come to the rec committee, but they don't meet every other month. We're out talking to people. So we really need you guys, if you would, get it on your agenda so you can talk about it. And you have folks of that committee here. And I think it's something you're probably going to do, but we're out promoting what we're doing and hopefully that you would deal with it. And so if,
okay.
If we're not going to be able to do it, we need to know that, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Then.
So we could give it to staff and
that, what, let that
and bring
be the best
it
thing. It still has to go through the process, somewhat of the process.
We understand that.
You kind of got the cart in front of the horse a little bit, but we'll see what we can do to help you out.
Well, we'd like to just get... We're not asking
it's
to
a public,
make decisions
it's
tonight.
It's a public arena that you're asking to put a plaque onto. That's why it has to come through.
And we understand
okay.
that, but we're asking that it not have to go to a committee that doesn't meet for a month, and you guys meet in 2 or 3 weeks. So we'd like to get it on your agenda so you can talk about it.
We're all aware of that. I still present it to staff, and we'll work on it from there.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Any other public comment? Seeing none, I will, at this point, close public comment. Next item is our consent calendar.
Move approval of consent calendar.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion from the public? Hearing none. Any further discussion? None. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item D. I think we have ECC FPD here.
We just be ready for it. He'll tell you when.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, Chief.
Well, good evening, President Graves and the member of the directors. Thank you for letting me be here tonight. Chief McCumber is enjoying himself in the sandy beaches of Hawaii today. So
good for him.
I have the privilege of sitting in this spot. So for those of you that don't know me, my name is Brian Helmick. I'm the fire chief of East Contra Costa Fire Protection District. And I just wanted to provide you guys with some updates. I'm going to start from a high level and work ourselves down. I'll present you with the operations report at the end, answer any questions that you may have. But to start off, I want to talk a little bit about some governance changes and things we have coming up. Those of you who may be monitoring our situation, we just got through Measure A. Measure A was a request to the citizens of our jurisdiction to reduce our board from 9 to 5. It overwhelmingly passed at 91%. So we are going to be transitioning and moving towards an elected board, which is a long time in the coming. The elected board will be, their first meeting will be in December. So members or anyone that wants to participate in that election to be a director with the district, they can pull papers of county elections starting in July, filing close on August 10th. We'll continue to communicate this as we get closer to that date, and elections are November 6th. So that's a step in the right direction. We're excited to report that. Secondarily, moving into some district initiatives internally, we're working through a lot of board and bylaws processes. As a board, you guys can respect that and understand that. We're kind of doing an overhaul. We're doing an overhaul of all of our bylaws, board policies, our onboarding process to assure when the new board comes in place, it's a very smooth transition as we have a lot of business to do. Secondarily, as we have been working on very diligently trying to get through our OPEB, other post-employee benefits study, we plan on having a draft in district this week, and we're hoping to bring it to the board, if not April, May, for final approval, which is, again, that's been a long time in the coming. Furthermore, we are looking to receive drafts in the next month or two on our fiscal year 15, 16, 16, 17 audits. I know those sound as if they're behind as they are, but however, when I came in the district, we were still working on 13, 14, 14, 15. And so we're at the end of this year, the objective is as of July 1, we'll be focusing on the current year, which is, we're making a really good process on that. Internally, externally, we're also working on, we have a legislative consultant. This meeting that we have coming up on April the 9th, we are going to be looking to approve a legislative plan for us to get more involved at the state level and also the local level and in some degrees the federal level to try to figure out some solutions for our district. I'll start going up to the state starting on the 20th of this month. This is going to be a regular practice. Really no asks right now. It's just a more of introducing myself, presenting our problem, and identifying some opportunities of which I can bring back to the board that we can act on in months to come. And we have our strategic plan. So we've been working for the past couple months of getting a firm in place. We're working with a firm called Management Partners to do a strategic plan. We're going to be finalizing the agreement. The agreement's been finalized, but the plan to roll out a strategic plan, which will be a very inclusive process. You all are welcome. Citizens of the community are welcome to participate in this process. It will define service levels, service level priorities, the time it takes to implement them, and associated costs for us to be able to do so. And the goal is to have this done also by the time that the elected board comes in place so they have an idea of what initiatives the community wants and what we're striving for. And there'll be a nexus for the legislative and strategic plan to meet at that point. At least those are the goals right now. Operationally, and I'll pass these out in an operational report. There's not really anything to report operationally that is much different than months past. Your response times are still around the 10 minute mark. They are substantially higher than they should be. National average wants between 5 to 7 minutes. You guys are at 10. But this is not anything different than in the years past. You'll find it on page 1. When it talks about service levels, where your numbers are. It redefines it again in a different format for you on page 2 and the third bullet. You guys had 74 calls, and when I say you, your service area is really Byron and Discovery Bay, so that's another indicator why your service times or response times are a little extended. You had 74 calls last month, as where the month before you were 86. Some of the highlights in the report, which you can go in further detail later, is on page 3. It talks about the automatic aid or agencies coming from the outside into support operations. You can see on page 3, It identifies when it says received engines. Contra Costa County Fire Protection District sent us for 37 incidents. They responded in sending 48 engines. That's more than one engine per day on average. That doesn't mean they come out here. That's just to our jurisdiction. But that's an indicator that we obviously don't have enough resources to provide adequate protection within the district. On page four, this is encouraging. I will be promoting two permanent battalion chiefs as of April 1st, which will help us operationally and administratively be more efficient. And I'll also be hiring what is a business services manager that is going to be a direct report to myself and help us with a lot of our administrative processes, which we've really been struggling with in a short period of time, but I believe we have a good pathway forward to remedy a lot of the issues that we have. And that will, by bringing the business services manager in, promoting those two battalion chiefs up, we've been working on a reorganization since April of last year, and that will finalize the reorganization and restructuring for us to be prepared for future growth. If we don't have future growth, we'll be able to be sustainable and maintain effectively. The last page that I have for you to look at is, if you look at the very last page at the bottom, it says 3 hours, 15 minutes, and then it shows three calls. What that means is that our agency, we had 3 hours and 15 minutes, we had no units available responding to calls. During that time period, three calls came in. They were all covered by Contra Costa County Fire, and it also identifies the response times. So that is your operational report. And before I get to any questions, the last thing I want to hit on is that we have reinstituted and station open houses. We're hitting all of our communities. We're doing all of our stations. We're trying to do on a quarterly basis until we get here again next year in March. But what I'd like to do is show you a short little video. It's about less than 2 minutes. But I'm really proud of our members, how they really harnessed this idea. We had 200 people from this community attend on that day.
At 59?
At 59.
Fantastic.
On Bixler and Discovery Bay. We had PG&E, a lot of other agencies that we cooperate with to provide additional services to your citizens. And it's just the beginning, so it's really encouraging. So I'd like to share that video with you.
Please.
It will be available for questions. I don't know if that's sound.
TV volumes probably aren't turned up.
Thank you.
we actually, our outreach committee has been just using every resource they can find to do a lot of cool different things.
It was nice.
And they just, yeah.
Sure.
Very good.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Next year is about the same time.
Yes.
We expect a lot more than 200 people.
I would love that too, both of us. The weather was a challenge, I think a lot of people were intimidated. It was great, thank you.
How's the relationship with Confire going?
I'm sorry?
How's the relationship with Confire? Because we're taxing they have their own budget problems and we're contributing a little bit to that. Your relationships?
Yeah, so they're down approximately 3 units also. So okay. I mean, they're under resourced.
I understand.
For their jurisdiction. So I will tell you, when I came in April, it was, to be transparent, it was rocky.
Uh-huh.
Because we wanted to go to a borderless system, share resources back and forth. But I can tell you that it's shown to be very positive operationally. The line personnel support it. Administratively, we support it. So this is not going to be sustainable forever,
right?
The way that we're doing it. But I will tell you that not only operationally, but administratively, and trying to share resources to identify our approach is appropriate. We have a very strong relationship, but it's not one to be taken for granted. So I wouldn't say that there's anything that's pushing on us right now versus urgency, but in time it will be.
Well, I think they probably have seen the same positive results that we're starting to see. I want to thank you again for your leadership. And, as someone that's been going to those meetings for about 10 years, I'm happy to see that things are moving in the right direction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Next, we're going to hear from our audit firm.
Go ahead.
Come on up.
Okay, as you know, the district performs an annual audit, and here to present the results of that audit for fiscal year 16-17 is Paul Green, a Sanguinetti of Hershey, Sanguinetti, and Vanderbilt.
Good evening. I don't know if I can follow a whole video. I don't have a video, so.
Show us numbers.
Lots of paper with numbers. Okay, so tonight I'm going to go over the audit for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2017. I know none of you are new to this process. So on page one, I'm just going to get right to the report. This is our independent auditor's report. So we have issued an unmodified opinion, which is the highest level of assurance that we can give you as your auditors, that there are no material misstatements to your financial statements. What that means is it's a clean opinion. You cannot get anything better than this. This is the best you can get. So from the board standpoint, you should feel good about that. Again, this is standard language. There is nothing that's modified in this report. So it's a very good report. Which is what you have received in the past. It's consistent with what we, what you've historically been receiving. Continuing on to the next section, which is the management's discussion and analysis. This is a requirement for government accounting standards. And what this section does, it's like pages 3-11. This is like a summary of your financial statements. It gives you some narrative. It compares prior year data to current year data. Because your financial statements are not comparative, this is the only section where you can kind of see what happened from last year to this year. So if we go, and also in this, these first few pages, it kind of gives you an overview of the financial statements. It explains there's two bases of accounting, just as a reminder for government accounting standards. There's government-wide financial statements and their fund-based financial statements. Government-wide is full accrual, just like you would see in the for-profit world. You record all your liabilities, record all your assets, and on the modified accrual, which is also called fund-based and for government reporting purposes, they modify certain things. So there's certain liabilities that are not included in that section, certain receivables are not included, there's no capital assets, so there's just two bases. So this one kind of gives you an explanation of those two bases of accounting that are in your statements. On page five, this shows you a comparison between last year and this year in regards to the balance sheet, basically, your statement of net position. So you'll see if you look at your total assets, this year did increase, increased about almost $10 million. That's primarily due to an increase in your cash. You guys did have a bond that you acquired during this fiscal year, and so you did have an increase in cash due to that bond funding. In addition to that, you had some large additions to capital assets, hence the bond you used to purchase capital assets. So the reason why you have such a large increase in your total assets is due to that, primarily due to the new bond. And then in your liabilities, you'll see your total liabilities also increased, pretty proportionate to the same as you're increasing your assets, so about $10 million again, in relation to primarily to the bond. And then you'll see your net position for the year increased about $453,000. Continuing on to page six, this shows you your changes in net position or your profit or loss of the year. So you see overall in the total column in 2017, your total change in net position was $453,000. So you showed a profit overall of $453,000. These are broken up into governmental activities and business type activities. Just a reminder, your governmental activities is your community center, your land and landscaping 8 and 9, and your business type activities is your water and sewer. So overall, you did show a positive change this year. You'll see your total revenues were slightly down from last year to this year. Not a huge change there. It's primarily due to some decrease in some capacity fees. And then your expenses did go up. That's primarily due to the increasing your depreciation expense. The bond that you guys received in 2012, a lot of those assets are now in service, and so now you have a larger amount of assets that are being depreciated. So you have a significant increase in your depreciation expense. You also did have some other, expenses that came through during the year. Continuing on to, you'll see on page 7 there's some graphs just kind of showing your percentage, so you can see what makes up your revenue source for your governmental activities. Obviously, primarily that most of it's made up of property taxes, or half of it is property taxes. Continuing on page 8, again, there's more graphs. This is for your business type activities, so this is your water and sewer, primarily charges for services, which you would suspect that would be the case, considering you're charging for users for those services. Continuing on page 10, you'll see your capital asset. There's some highlights at the top regarding some significant additions to capital assets during the year. You had the effluent filtration project, the water meter project. You had a new roof on the community center, and then you had a Willow Lake, the water treatment plant control system. Some of those items are not depreciating yet, but they were added to your capital assets. So those were significant changes because you had a $7 million increase in your capital assets. So the table below, you'll see that compares, so you can kind of see where those changes occurred. You'll see primarily construction in progress was significantly increased. Again, that's due to the new projects that you guys are doing currently. So your net capital assets at the end of the year were $51,479,000. Down below that, you'll see debt administration. This is just telling the reader that you do have a new bond that you acquired during 2017. Continuing, now we get into the basic financial statements. This just shows your current year activity. And so your statement of net position on page 12, this is on government-wide basis, so this is full accrual. Again, showing all your capital assets, all your liabilities. So you had total assets at the end of the year of $70,226,000. Significant amount of that is your capital assets, which makes, for this district, you would expect that. As you're providing services for sewer and water, and so that requires a lot of infrastructure. So majority of your assets are capital assets and cash and investments. Then down below in your liabilities, you'll see a total liabilities of $23,893,000. Again, most of that is the bonds payable amount of $21,435,000. So your total net position at the end of the year of the $46,333,000. Continuing to the statement of activities, this shows the income expenses for the year. It breaks it out by your governmental activities and business type activities. Again, on page 13, you'll see you had a net profit in the district of $453,000. Your governmental activities had a loss of $321,000. and your business type activities had a profit of $775,000. So it's kind of broken up by the different activities. On page 14, this is the balance sheet for the governmental funds. So this is on the modified accruals. This is the fund base. So that's why you're not going to see capital assets. You're not going to see any long-term liabilities like compensated absences or bonds. So you'll see your total assets on this basis is $1,567,000 for your governmental funds. Again, that's your general fund, community center, 8 and 9. And then down below, you'll see liabilities of $136,000, and then your total fund balances of $1,430,000. Down below, there's a reconciliation that's required that reconciles this fund balance to the government-wide basis. I know it's confusing, but that's just it's a requirement, unfortunately. So this reconciles that to the government-wide basis. On page 15, this is the statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balances for the governmental funds. Again, this is your revenues and expenses for those funds, the general fund, community center 8 and 9. So you'll see for that net change in fund balance for these funds was a loss of $251,152. Then continuing on page 16, this reconciles basically the net profit from the fund-based reporting to the government-wide basis. So it's reconciling page 16 back to page 13. On page 17, this is the statement of net position for proprietary funds. So this is your water and sewer and your financing authority. So that had total assets of the year $79,682,000. And your liabilities, your current liabilities were $1,749,000, and then your non-current was $35,285,000. And then you had your net position, which is made up of your net investment in capital assets, and then also your unrestricted net positions. On page 18, this is a statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in fund position for proprietary funds. So again, this is showing your revenues and expenses for the Water and Sewer and Financing Authority. So you'll see the change in net position for these funds was $775,000 for the year. This includes all the expenses in association with acquiring those bonds. So you'll see bond issuance costs and then your interest expense also. On page 19, this is a statement of cash flows. A statement of cash flows is required for your proprietary funds, so your Water, Sewer, and Financing Authority. Your governmental funds are not required to have a statement of cash flows. So this shows you cash in and cash out during the year. So you start with your cash flows from operating activities. So you had net cash provided by operating activities of $3,542,000, which is, you always want to, if you're looking at a cash flow statement, even in a for-profit world, you usually want to look at those operating activities. So if you're showing a positive number, that means your cash flow and your operations with money that you're receiving during the year. So it's always a good sign on the strength of the organization when you have that number be a positive number. And then cash flows from non-capital financing activities. So you had net cash provided of $8,706,000. And then your cash flows from capital and related financing activities. This is acquisition of capital assets. So you had $7,600,000 for those activities. And then you had some interest income. So you had an increase in your cash and investments of $4,642,000. So at the end of the year, you had $16,835,000 cash and investments. Continuing on to page 20. So this starts the notes to your financial statements. I'm not going to go through all of these. unless you want me to, which I assume you don't. Note A is a summary of significant accounting policies. This is the largest note that you have, so it goes through and explains the description of the reporting entity. It tells you what basis of accounting. It goes through your accounting policies. So if you just continue, these are all standard that you received before. There's nothing new in Note A. Continuing on to page 31, you will see at the top of page 31 there are some new accounting pronouncements. This is not yet adopted. There is going to be some changes in regards to leases. What they're doing in the accounting world is they currently, there are two types of leases. There's capital leases and operating leases. A capital lease, you end up capitalizing that asset and you record the liability. An operating lease, you just expense those payments as you go along. Now what they're going to do is they're going to basically make everything like a capital lease. So whether it's an operating lease or a capital lease, it's all going to be on your balance sheet. You're going to see that asset and you're going to see that debt. If it's less than a year, if your lease is less than a year or month to month, you won't see it anywhere. But if it's anything more than a year, it's time. So just know that that's coming down the pipeline, so it will potentially could change your statements going forward. On page 31, note B, your cash and investments. This just shows you your cash and investments for the year, you know, broken up by the different governmental activities and business type activities. You do have investments, you have a certificate of deposit, and then you also you have money held at Contra Costa County Treasurer. Then this note kind of continues on going through the investment policy, and these are all required, you know, interest rate risk. This is all standard, nothing new here. On note C, accounts receivable, this just shows you your accounts receivable broken out by the different funds and then the amounts for any uncollectibles. You have a small allowance for uncollectibles just because primarily you should be able to collect because you can put a lien on, you know, so you really don't have much that you're not going to collect. Note D is inter fund transactions, so you do have activity between funds. So this is just disclosing that you have such transactions. On page 37, note E, capital assets. It just gives you more detail of your capital assets by governmental activities and business type activities. Continuing to note F is your long-term debt. So this is your disclosure regarding your bonds. So that's the only debt that you guys have. So you'll see that the new debt got added this year into the table on page 39. And then on page 40, it's a requirement to show you the future maturities of that debt. So that's included in the table at the bottom of page 40. On page 41, this is your deferred comp plan. You offer a 457 plan to your employees. So this is just explaining that and the contributions into that plan. Note H is compensated absence, otherwise known as accrued vacation. So you did have some accrued vacation at the end of the year. Note I is the disclosure for your insurance because you are part of SDRMA, so it's considered a joint powers agreement. And then you have your liability, limits of liability on page 42. Note J is just a listing of the governing board, and then note K is just a generic, you may have some litigation just in the normal course of the business. And then the required supplementary information, this is just for zone 8. You're only required to show a budget of actual for any governmental funds that are considered a major fund. And so Lighting and Landscaping 8 is your only major fund for those purposes. So this shows you budgeted amounts versus actual amounts. And then the other independent auditor's report. So your audit was performed in accordance with government auditing standards. So this is a report saying that we have performed our audit in that in accordance with those standards.
Good job.
Anybody have any questions
for the board?
46 pages in 7 minutes.
I know, sorry. I can go back if you want me to, but I know I'm kind of real quick.
Bill, do you have any?
No, I don't have a question on it. I think you did a fantastic job. I want to commend staff for doing some this report. The only thing I'd suggest for the future is that myself, I'd like to see this before the meeting, so I'd have a chance to look at it and become familiar. But you did an adequate job explaining it, so thank you.
We do have a letter that we always go over to with the board. It's our communication with those charged with governance letter. And just so you know, that letter is clean. There isn't anything in there to be concerned about. What is also in there is any journal entries that we did that were material. So we did do some adjustments that were material to your financial statements. And those are listed in this letter. So when you guys get the final report, you'll see that there's this. Those are what those amounts are on that second page. So other than that, it was a clean report.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. As well done as usual.
I want to thank staff. And I want to thank Dina and Mike.
So do we.
And they, like I said, they let us a couple of weeks and dig in and mess up their whole office and bother them and disrupt their lives. So we appreciate that.
Accept it.
That's fair.
You have something?
I do. So what are you looking for this evening? So you've made the report. Generally, if I recall my past of this, generally the report comes out. It comes out in draft form. You take any comments, take any clarifying questions. You go back, make changes. You'll pull a final together. And at the next meeting, we will ask them to accept the report that you present.
Yes, if they don't have any changes to the draft, then I've received the management representation letter from Dina. I'm just waiting for the legal letter. Once we can get the legal representation letter, we, from our standpoint, we can issue finals. So as long as you guys have, are okay with the drafts and there are any changes, then that's exactly what will happen.
Well, we just received this tonight, so I don't anticipate any, but we will get to staff if we have any.
That's what I was just going to suggest, is if you've got any comments on them, you can send them to me or Mike, and we'll get them to your office.
Absolutely.
Or you're welcome to call me, too. You're welcome to, if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I almost forgot. Thank you very much. Mr. Helfrich, I believe you had some comments you'd like to make on this report.
Hi, I'm Bill Helfrich. I live here in Discovery Bay. I'm kind of with you. This is the first time I've seen it, so I was taking some notes as she was going through it. My questions are going to go around. There's a proprietary loss of $321,866 in government activities. I'd like to know more detail of what that is. And I think there are reports that show that further in. On page 15, it has the special funds revenue and lists one of them as the community center, showing a fund balance of $435,565 beginning and ending. So nothing's happened to that during the year. Just questioning what that is and why that wasn't used to fund the losses the community center is operating with.
Can we read an answer?
On page 23, the summary of significant accounting policies, it talks about the community center. It says accounts for revenue and expenditures of acquiring, funding, and operating the community center. So it kind of implies that that 400 might be able to be used for operations. And then on page 36, the notes to basic financial statements. It appears to me that there is about $1 million that is being moved out of the water and sewer funds going into the government funds. So it's like a crossover. I had thought that water was water, sewer was sewer, and government funds are something separate, and you can't use those other funds for that. So I'd like to dig into that a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate your comments. Any other comments with regards to our audit report from the public? Hearing none, I thank you for your presentation, and we'll get back to you with all the proper paperwork, and we'll move forward. Correct?
Yeah, I was just going to seek direction from you in terms of the questions that were asked. You've got a couple of options with that. You could have Mr. Helfrich meet with staff or meet with the consultant afterwards, or you could call the consultant up now and have her run through those questions quickly if you'd like. Your choice.
How quickly can you get through those questions?
Probably fairly quickly.
Would you? Okay, let's go for it. Let's clear the board. That takes it off staff today. Come on up and address, if you can recall.
Hopefully I can remember.
Okay, so we talked about that $435,000 starting and ending balance. That was the first item.
So the community center, so that what that represents is, from my recollection, is before the district acquired this community center, the district received money from developers
and some fundraising
back when, and that money was intended to purchase or acquire a community center. But when the community center was purchased, the money that was used to purchase the community center was line landscaping aid money and some of the community center money. So that money that is in that column can be used for the community center, because that was the original intent of that money. So, but what's been happening is when activities for the community center have been happening or expenses are coming up, it's getting paid out of eight because they're the ones who part of that purchase was from eight. So, but that money can be used for community center.
It's designated community center funds, yes. Though, and I do recall that now.
Yes.
It goes back a long way.
Yes.
It goes back to a lot of license plate frames.
So I know that was one of his main questions.
And just for clarity, those would be restricted funds that can only be used for the community center.
This should only be used for community center. Yes. I believe he had a question regarding...
Bill, you want to help us out?
I took notes of it.
Go ahead.
Good. So the first question he had was the proprietary loss of revenue. Wants info on the proprietary loss. I don't recall I got a page number. I think it was page 9, he said.
So the proprietary funds didn't have a loss. The business type activities or proprietary funds had a profit of $775,000. The governmental activities are the ones that had a loss of $321,000. So that's 8, 9 general fund and community center are showing a loss of $321,000.
His second question was on page 15 related to the expenditure. I didn't get anything other than the expenditure down, so if you've got a question or you need him to clarify, but page 15 asking a question regarding the expenditure item.
I don't know what he was
no,
not sure what.
The page 15 was the community center for
$400,000. Oh, that's okay. What I thought, yeah.
And then the last one I got was governance funds and moving them page 36.
Yeah, so on page 36, he's referencing the transfers in and out. So what's happening is, for example, I can give you an example of why there's transfers between funds. One of the largest items is payroll. So you have an account at the county that is, all of the payroll comes out of this one account at the county. And because you have cash that it all goes together. There isn't necessarily separate funds for all, there isn't separate accounts for all of your funds. So you have some commingling of the cash. And so the money.
Because of the way the county takes care of it.
Because of the way the county.
Not because of what we do.
Right. So you have this money at the county, and all of your payroll is coming out of this county account. And that county account right now is designated between water and sewer. So those other districts have to, we have to get the payroll into those other funds. So in order to do that, we have to do it via transfers.
Okay.
So a lot of these transfers have to do with salaries and wages. And there are other items that happen during the years, vehicle reimbursements, there's various other things that come that are kind of things that are happening between the funds.
Understood.
So it's not really that money's being necessarily not used appropriately, it's just it's getting recorded in one fund, and we have to move it to the appropriately so we can correctly record, for example, salaries and wages in each of the funds.
Whether it be landscaping, which doesn't have its own fund, therefore transfers occur.
Right.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate the explanation. Okay, item E2. I have a couple of comment cards on that also. I'm going to start with... I'm sorry.
Sorry. Did you want to do a staff report first?
I would like. I'd love to do a staff report first. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm going to invite MCE, formerly Marine Clean Energy, to come up and make a presentation on MCE.
You're waiting for something to load. Hey, there's MCD. Oh, I think you're on. Yeah.
All right. So, hello, everybody. My name is Marcella, and I'm a community affairs representative from MCE. I'd like to take this moment to thank Mike for inviting us to speak tonight to all of you. We were connected through Dawn, who is a district representative for their supervisor of purchase. So, also indirectly thanking her. But I'm here tonight to share what OCE is, what we do, hopefully answer any questions that anybody might have, and I'm just going to jump right in. So, like I said, I am with MCE. We were, like it says on the agenda, formerly known as Marin Clean Energy. We are an electric service provider, and we currently, well, in April, we will begin serving 33 member communities, but just to move backwards a little bit of history is we launched in 2008. We started serving communities in 2010, so we've been serving communities for about 8 years now. Since we originally began in Marin, we've then expanded out into, as you can see, Marin County, Napa County, the city of Benicia and Salado County, and a few of the cities in Contra Costa County in blue, we've been serving. Everything that you see in green here is the communities that we would begin serving starting in April. Those being Discovery Bay would be in Contra Costa County. All of these communities voted to join MCE service sometime last year, and will begin receiving MCE service starting in April. Now, we are a public agency, and we are governed by a board of directors, of which we're on the first title slide. Now, what that means is that whenever a community votes to join our service, a member of their council is given the opportunity to serve on our board, and the board is responsible for making all the decisions in terms of rates and any programs that we offer in pretty much all of our operations. So, forward into what that means in terms of how electric service works. We like to break it down into three parts, one being the service that you receive in your home or business, the other being the actual delivery of the electricity to your home or business, so the poles and wires that you see, the grid, and then the origination of that, which is the generation, actually where those electrons are generated. And when MCE comes into a new community, what we do solely is we take over generation services. So you still receive a bill from PG&E. PG&E continues to own, operate, and maintain the grid. They still charge for transmission and distribution. They still also do gas services. The only thing that MCE does is take over the generation portion of the bill. And we procure more renewable energy, so our portfolio is cleaner than PG&E's default portfolio, which I will get into now. So prior to MCE service, most customers had one option for their where their electricity came from, and through PG&E they got default 33% renewable energy. When MCE joins a community, the default option then becomes our 50% renewable option, which is called light green, and we do have a 100% renewable option, which is called deep green, which is only a penny per kilowatt hour more than our light green option. And actually, as you'll see later, our light green option is closer to 57% renewable. Now, we at MCE believe that choice is power. That being said, and I know that I've heard this is a concern here in the town of Discovery Bay, we are an opt-out program, which means that when a community votes to join our service, all meters are automatically enrolled into our service. In this case, in phase six, as we're calling it, will be in April, which a lot of people can rub some people the wrong way, and I do want to quickly address that in that MCE is a what's called a community choice aggregator, CCA, and there was state legislation passed back in 2002 that allowed for this type of program to exist, and written into that legislation was that these programs would be opt-out programs. I'm sure more than one reason, but I would say primarily to make them economically viable. But also, I'll just leave it at that. But we do recognize that being an opt-out program and residents and businesses being automatically enrolled is can be sort of a sore subject for people. And the way that we try to combat that is by doing outreach, by coming to meetings like this. We also go to community events, and we send out mailers that are actually required by law for us to send out 60 to 30 days before our actual service. And we do town hall style events. We try to go to farmers markets and community meetings, rotary clubs, things like that. So we try our darndest to be very involved in the new communities that we're serving, to educate people as much as possible before the change happens, so that they have ample time before the change happens to research us and to make a decision on whether they would like to stay with PG&E or continue on with MCE service. So, like I said, one of the reasons that we come up to events like this is to inform the public and give them the opportunity to make the choice of whether to remain with PG&E or continue with MCE service. Now, another big concern is rates. And as it stands right now, I can definitively say that we are 2 to 5% cheaper than PG&E. That being said, rates are a snapshot in time, and while MCE sets the rates once a year, PG&E has changed their rates anywhere from 2 to 5 times a year historically. So this is a cost comparison as rates are currently. As it says on the bottom there, the rates effective as of March 1st. And as you can see, our 50% renewable option, which again is called light green, is slightly less expensive than PG&E's default option for the average residential customer in our service area. And sort of to break this down line by line, we have that first line, which is electric delivery, which all customers pay the same amount if we're on the same rate class, which is why that 5542 is seen across all three options. The next line is electric generation, which is again, when MCE joins a new community, they take over solely generation. So you can see in the first column and in the third column, our generation rates are actually significantly cheaper for both our 50% renewable option and our 100% renewable option. They are both significantly cheaper than PG&E's default 33% renewable option. Now, where that savings is gobbled up is in the final line, which is the PG&E added fees. Now, this is what is called the PCIA, the Power Charge and Difference Adjustment, which the state has allowed PG&E to charge departing customers, essentially. Because in the past, PG&E has procured long-term contracts to serve all of its customers, and with customers then leaving to join another service such as MCE, they are still like on the bind for those contracts. So this added fee for MCE customers is a way to promote fairness across all PG&E customers for a generation, across all customers, both MCE and PG&E customers for generation, so that customers who decide to stay with PG&E or who don't have the option, for example, who are not being served by a CCA, which is MCE, or any other CCAs across Northern California, so that they are not left to pay for those long-term contracts. And I can answer any questions about that in depth later if you would like. But going into some more cost comparisons, here's the commercial cost comparison. And as you can see, again, we are, as it stands now, less expensive than PG&E. And I would also like to point out that PG&E does also have 100% renewable options, but they are significantly more expensive than both their default and our default and our 100% renewable options.
Are they buying your power for 100%?
PG&E is not buying our power, and nor are we buying their power, which is also a misconception. We have our own contracts, PG&E has their own contracts with energy providers. Continuing on with the cost comparisons, we had an account manager and our data analyst do a cost comparison for the Discovery Bay accounts. So this is in the folders that I passed, or I think that JR passed out before the meeting started, we do have this more detailed. But essentially, as you can see, if all accounts were not opted out and were enrolled in our light green option, over the course of 2 months, Discovery Bay is set to save about $6,000, and that's we used a summer month bill and a winter month bill. And actually, if you can see for the A6 line and the A1F line, having those accounts opted up to D green would be an extremely minimal increase in cost as compared to PG&E. And you do have a couple more charts on here, but I do want to fast forward on to this last one, which, depending on how you like to look at it, this would be the percentages that you would be saving by participating in our light green option. And actually, I wanted to point out, I was going over the Town of Discovery Bay website, and I noticed that the mission said to provide effective and fiscally responsible municipal services in a manner which promotes a high standard of community life with a focus on the environment and the Delta in partnership with the community. And some of the goals were responsible management of public funds and to promote a protected environment, and one of the vision statements was to promote practices that provide enhanced and sustainable life now and for the future. And those visions and goals correspond a lot with our visions and goals at MCE in terms of protecting the environment, and actually part of our mission statement is to protect the environment by reducing greenhouse gas emissions related to electricity usage. So something to note. But moving on to more MCE-related items. Discount programs such as Care Fair and Medical Baseline remain the same with MCE service. So as far as any residents are concerned, those remain the same. When enrollment happens in April, there's no need to reapply to those programs, and they're actually not PG&E programs, they're state programs, and they are not lost by anybody becoming an MCE customer. Now, in terms of the bill, what people will see at the first page on the top, what they'll see in terms of changes is that line that's squared out says current electric charges is what people are seeing currently. And like I said previously, electric service works in two different parts. It's generation and transmission and distribution. That line currently is reflecting both of those costs bundled into one, just electric charge. What happens when MCE joins community is those charges then get split into two separate ones, one being the PG&E electric delivery charges and the other being MCE electric generation charges. Now, a lot of people see this and think that MCE is an additional charge on their bill, and that's not the case. We are just a replacement charge. We are just splitting that charge from delivery and generation into one, which is how it was with PG&E, and we're splitting it into the two, where electric delivery goes to PG&E and the generation goes to MCE. Now, when we were driving out here, we noticed that there was a lot of solar, rooftop solar, on a lot of the houses out here, which is fantastic. And for anybody who has solar, there are some differences with our solar program and PG&E's solar program. These are the main ones. Essentially, we pay premium rates for excess solar generation. That, to explain that a little more, is our deep green rate, as compared to our light green rate, is a penny per kilowatt hour more, and that is what we pay back to customers who are excess generators, whereas PG&E pays wholesale rates for excess generation. Another main difference is that excess credits roll over year after year with MCE, and excess credits through PG&E are zeroed out after your true-up, which happens once a year, depending on when your solar was installed. And another difference is that we don't do an annual true-up. Solar customers get billed monthly, and PG&E, like I said, does the annual true-up, which actually some customers really prefer that annual true-up, and for those customers, we just say, we recommend you opt out and stay with PG&E if that's how you like to be billed for solar. Yeah, so solar can be pretty complicated, and for anybody with more specific questions, we generally direct them to some of our solar experts over at SCE. Now, like I said, we do pay premium rates for excess generators, and this is not always the case, but these are a couple cases that we're especially proud of. We actually paid out the city of Venetia over $100,000, I think it was close to $120,000, and West Contra-Costa School District just over $28,000 for their excess generation. So that's one way in which we give back to solar customers, and in this case, more specifically, that we give back to communities. Now another way that we give back, and in this specific way incentivize the development of local renewable projects, and by local we mean within our service area, is through this feed-in tariff program, which essentially just incentivizes local small-scale renewable projects to come online, and like I said, local within our service area. And this is for people who have unused space, so either a lot of like a large building with a lot of rooftop space or large parking lot, where we have standardized 20-year contracts with a fixed price per megawatt hour generated, and that price that we're paying is significantly above market value. So in that way, we incentivize local projects coming online. Now, that is the basics. I will leave this one up for any questions on that or any other questions that anybody might have that I perhaps didn't address.
Could you name a few of your generation facilities?
I'm going to turn around and bring my colleague JR in for that question.
Is it okay if I approach?
Please, come up. Absolutely, we prefer.
Good evening, Board of Directors. My name is J.R. Killigrew, and I'd love to chat with you about some of our generation assets, or not assets, but ways in which we procure energy. 80% of our contracts are within the state of California. That's not only for renewable or hydro, but also conventional sources. But we also have 20 megawatts that powers about 10,000 homes, all located within our service area. We just had a big project in Richmond called Richmond Solar One. It's 10.5 megawatts that was interconnected in late December, and that's helping to power that part of the Bay Area.
So this is a facility that MCE owns?
We don't own any facilities yet because as a not-for-profit, we can't take advantage of the tax appetite. But that probably will be the one site that we do own after the developer is able to incur the tax appetite about 6 or 7 years into the future. But outside of that, we also have a great biogas plant up in Novato. It's at the Redwood landfill. That actually is one of kind of the cooler projects that we have. It's a baseline fuel. It's powering 24/7, and that's powering about 6,000 homes. So we'd love to, if you folks have an anaerobic digester in terms of wastewater treatment here. We also entered into a contract with, I think, the Central Marin Sanitation District to pay them a healthy sum for about 60 kilowatts or 100 kilowatts worth of biogas for that plant, for something to consider. We hope to catalyze the market that we come into through our FIT program and through other power purchase agreements. We're hoping to have the opportunity just to give folks a chance to be able to participate in this type of economics.
All right. I'm a little fuzzy on it, but how does joining MCE save money?
Great question. And a lot of people are always wondering about that. So the great thing about folks like us is we're a little more nimble in terms of our contracting. We can go out to the marketplace. We do power procurement called RFOs every year, where we have contractors who come out, or power producers who basically present their best offers to us, and we have the ability to pick the best, most affordable options. So I think right now we have about 35 different contracts across both California and the Pacific Northwest. And we can be in kind of shorter 1, 3, 5 year contracts, as well as some 10 or 20 year contracts. So because of the diversification of all those contracts, we can bring the most affordable rates. And as you can see, PG&E's been in the business a long time, so they have some kind of very old, long-standing contracts that are at much higher rates than they're able to get now. So that's a lot of the reason why. If you look at our generation costs, we're a lot less expensive than PG&E.
How much of your power is hydroelectric?
Great question. I think at right now we're about 18%.
Okay, so how much of PG&E is hydroelectric?
I think they're at 20% now.
So a portion of their 33% is that hydroelectric that is considered renewable energy for them?
No, and that's a really important distinction. And so the state of California, through the Renewable Portfolio Standard, has identified only 5 sources of renewable energy. That's wind, solar, biomass, geothermal, and then small-scale hydro. So those are sites with 30 megawatts or less. Large-scale hydro is not deemed renewable, but it's technically carbon-free. So it's a great asset to have. But the thing is, the state of California is not building any more big hydroelectric plants. So it's kind of one of those things that we have a finite amount of those resources, whereas we have a lot of sun, we have a lot of wind, we have a lot of biogas, and we want to replicate those types of technologies.
That's always been an interesting distinction for me, because
Rain's
renewable. Rain produces water, which produces electric, which makes it a renewable energy, and yet PG&E gets no credit for that being a renewable energy, and you do because you use it on a smaller scale. I don't know how...
No, we don't. Yeah, we still contract for large hydro.
Okay.
Hydro. It's not that we...
So even if it's 18% of yours, that may not be part of your renewable energy.
It's not, no.
Okay.
Yeah. So ours is 57%, and it's comprised of those 5 sources.
I'm with you. Okay.
Well, the great thing is...
At least it levels the playing field.
Yeah, no. And the great thing is PG&E and MCE, actually, if you're looking at our what they call an emission factor, which is you look at the carbon intensity of all the types of fuels that we procure for, PG&E and MCE, for their default product, we're only 3% cleaner. And a lot of that has to do with the great hydro year, but also they have a very big nuclear plant that's going to be running up until they shut it down in 2025. That's going to be serving about 24% of their load. So as more customers leave from PG&E service, their carbon intensity is going to keep dropping down. But I think what it does is it provides a collective effort towards the state's climate goals.
Fair enough. Other comments on the board?
Oh, yeah, if there's a power outage here in Discovery Bay and everybody is on this new MCE program, who do they call, PG&E or MCE?
Yeah, so they're still going to be calling PG&E. Like I said earlier, MCE just takes over generation. PG&E still owns and operates the grid, and they're still responsible for maintenance. And like I said, maintaining the lines. And actually, there's a little bit in the video that we watched earlier where they said there was PG&E doing power line safety. So that's still solely their responsibility.
Is part of the cost of delivery that PG&E charges you for, or that we pay to PG&E for, however you want to state that, is part of that the transmission lines as well as the individual lines that go to our homes? So if you're buying power up in Washington, you're still paying, PG&E still transmitting that for you, correct? And we're paying, as part of that transmission fee to PG&E, we're paying for that transmission from the source, not just from the pole to our house.
Correct, yeah, it's transmission and distribution. So,
it's both.
The transmission comes from the major power plants, and then the
distribution comes from the pole to our home.
Yep.
Understood. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, on the FIT program, could you tell us more about that?
Yes, I to be brutally honest, I love it. I think it's a really great program. So the way it's set up is that all types of renewable energy, we have way above market rates for biogas if you want, but wind, but most of it's for solar. So what happens is if you're a property owner, you own a big warehouse or something like that.
Oh, the town of Discovery Bay's got land.
Yes, or you have land. It could be land, parking lots, or rooftops. So what will happen is we have a queue based on the size of the system. So the really great thing about the next step in MCE's kind of energy growth is that we not only have a feed-in tariff for up to 1 megawatt, so that usually powers about 300 homes for solar, but now we've expanded that to 1 to 5 megawatts. So for folks who have, and the rule of thumb is about 5 acres of land per 1 megawatt. So say if you folks have good, 10, 15 extra acres of land and it's not being used for anything else, and you could turn that into a really good revenue stream. And right now we're paying, I think, about $85 per megawatt hour, so it's 8.5 cents per kilowatt hour. So basically you can turn that into a really great revenue stream. There's some great cases of at the Freethy Industrial Park in Richmond. They put up 2 1-megawatt solar arrays. I think it's generating them about $550,000 in revenue.
And what kind of a land commitment does that require for 1 megawatt?
About 5 acres. That's kind of the rule of thumb. Best, we always recommend that it's good for property owners or people who have a good relationship with the property site, where they could take advantage of the rooftop or the parking lot or adjacent land. The biggest thing about,
especially, like 5 acres of rooftop.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing about developing energy, especially in the Bay Area, is the cost of land. It's like you can definitely greenfield, you can turn those into apartments or condos and make a lot more money than you could with energy. But for brownfield sites, of sites that otherwise aren't going to be used for something else, that's really where you get the revenue stream from.
So just calling you guys about the program?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
So totally different issue, but along the line, MCE came into Discovery Bay and caused quite a stir with the residents. And the biggest issue was the opting out. Can you tell me what you, so to me, every resident that has contacted me and that I've spoke to have all opted out. So I think there's a large number, maybe not the majority, but there's a large number. What's your plan to try to gain those back? And the issue there isn't the program, it's the rollout of the program that became the issue. Make sense? How do you address it?
Sure. So we're actually, with these informational presentations, are more, I think, interested in educating the public, and in terms of the people who have opted out, how we would get them back in. We, in a way, we still do outreach in communities that we're already serving, but essentially we're hoping, I'd say by word of mouth or, you know, talking to neighbors and who decided to stay with MCE and seeing how that change has either benefited them or remained neutral. And in that way, those customers may decide to come back. We sort of let our work, I'd say, speak for itself, and definitely our rate cases speak for themselves. Like I said, now we are about 2 to 5% cheaper, so customers who decide to stay with MCE will be saving savings. But like I said, we're not necessarily in the business of converting people as much as we are in the business of informing people of their new options when MCE joins an area.
So no program to try to regain those that you've lost?
I mean, like I said, we still do outreach in communities that we have been serving to hopefully inform people who maybe in the past have opted out. We still do community events in all of the communities that we've been serving for years now and still reach customers who...
Okay.
Yeah.
And I can't believe we're the only community that has this concern, so the role...
Oh, no, absolutely.
Was an issue. Okay. I'm going to go back to my question of who do we call if there's a power outage, because I'm still a little foggy on that. So if you're getting power supply from Oregon or some other spot, the source becomes the issue, and we call PG&E. I could see PG&E walking over. Not my issue. So do you see any future problems with power outages or issues with power supply that becomes, you know, not mine?
Yeah, and that's a completely fair question, but it is categorically illegal for an investor-owned utility to cherry-pick who they're going to serve or not. So if there's a power outage, they have to be agnostic in the sense that they have to go and fix any sort of disruption to their infrastructure, because honestly, that's how they make their revenue. That's how they become profitable, is from the transmission and distribution and their energy efficiency programs. I don't want to speak for PG&E, but the generation side, supposedly according to law, they're just supposed to pass through and not make any money off of that. But from the T&D side, that's their business, and they want to make sure people, their electricity turns on when they flip it on, and if something goes wrong, they're there to fix it ASAP. And they're very conscious of that, and they're on the ball. I mean, PG&E does a great job in terms of restoring power. And I think one of the interesting things about kind of this movement towards an electrified society, actually during kind of cataclysmic events, we can get the electricity grid up a lot faster than we can natural gas. So something to consider as people start moving a little away from natural gas towards electrified homes.
I want to go back to one of the fundamental issues, things that occurred early in your presentation. And that is, you said when a community votes to bring MCE in, this community never voted on anything.
So I'm curious as to how you're here if we never, if you're saying a community voted and this community didn't vote. I was never given an opportunity to vote on anything. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, and that's totally fair. And just to kind of backtrack and give you the historical context. So when the city of Richmond joined MCE in 2013, they were the first community to join our program. 2015, El Cerrito and St. Pablo joined. And then in 2016, you also had Walnut Creek and Lafayette. Now, in the beginning part of 2016, the county, Contra Costa County, directed staff to start investigating whether the county should start its own community choice program, join MCE, and then as their sister agency in Alameda County, East Bay Community Energy started moving forward, but then also to do nothing. So pretty much the county hired a consultant to do a feasibility study over the course of 2016. And by like late 2016, they published a report. They also had a variety of workshops. Now this was a collective action that all five supervisors got together and directed staff to investigate, because there are a lot of programs like ours opening up across the state, and there are a lot of economic development and workforce development opportunities, but also the idea that there's a ton of renewable energy potential in Contra Costa County, and they wanted to see what kind of potential there would be. So they spent that whole year analyzing everything. They did have public workshops, and then around the time of like late 2016, early 2017, that's when the consultants actually put forth kind of a recommendation that based on the analysis, they felt like joining MCE would be the least risky out of the four options. And from there, we held workshops across Contra Costa County. We went to city council meetings, county supervisor meetings, trying to do as much education as we could. And over that time, each one of the communities at the time, there's 15 that were looking at it. Nine of them elected to join. And where Discovery Bay falls into it is unincorporated Contra Costa County. So we worked a lot with staff, as well as each one of the supervisors, and we know that Supervisor Burgess's district. So ultimately, when the five supervisors decided to enroll unincorporated Contra Costa County last May, that's when the decision of all the wonderful hamlets or communities and unincorporated ultimately joined MCE.
So the community vote was five Board of Supervisors, not the community, to be clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll recognize that. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's... But I think on the flip side, it is those elected officials, they are elected democratically, and so, yeah.
I'm with you. I'm just saying, because, and I think that's where we run into this opt-out problem, because if we would have voted for it, we would have known what was coming. But nobody from MCE or the county, that I recall, came here and gave us a presentation that, in fact, we were going to be opted into something that we didn't ask to be into until... You guys did a good job of sending me something in the mail, and I want to say, I called your customer service people, spoke to a gentleman on the phone who ran my bill for me, and I got to tell you, it was like $1.10 difference on an average bill. He did all, he was great, good job on your part, kudos, right? I'm not going to try to convince my neighbor to go to MCE for $1.10. So word of mouth is not going to get somebody that, if I have MCE and I'm only saving $1.10 a month, I mean, I'm a frugal guy, because I work for the state, I gotta be. But $1.10 is not enough to make me try to convince somebody to change. So I think that, again, I do want to give props for their doing. Your customer service people were very fair, they didn't push anything on me, they were very honest and open, and said, I'm not here to try to convince you to do anything, I'm just here to give you information. So good job with that.
Is there any speculation on it? We know PG&E, we've been with them for so long, and we know what their rate increases year over year over year, and we speculate. Who's to say yours isn't going to go along with it or exceed that? Or do you have a plan for that or some limitations that would help those that want to bounce over?
Yeah, and that's a great point. We actually looked, kind of compared from when we launched in 2010 until now, and we also looked at where PG&E was. Our rates have, I think, decreased by about 1 or 2%. Whereas PG&E's, I think, have gone up almost 10%. So I think, if anything, if you want to look at a track record over the same amount of time historically, we've had a lot more stable competitive rates over that time. So if that's something of value to a customer, then rest assured, at least on the MCE generation side, we're going to be stable and we're going to be competitive. And to speak to the point you made about the call center, this is something that's pretty near and dear to my heart. Not we, but Calpine as well as AnswerNet opened a call center in the city of Pittsburgh at Supervisor Glover's old office, go figure. And that's created 11 full-time jobs for Contra Costa County. That's the first time we've been able to provide full-time jobs to a community before we enrolled. So I know there's a lot of push and pull about the dynamics of enrollment, but we're here to stay. We're a community-based organization. We're going to help to try to bring jobs to the northern waterfront as much as we can.
Appreciate your presentation. Any other questions from
you?
Bill has
one question. It appears there's an East Bay version of you guys. So how many MCE type of companies are there in California?
Great question. So right now we are, I believe there's 8 that are in operation. East Bay Community Energy just actually launched to kind of municipal customers. They're serving 12 of the 14 local governments at Alameda County. There's also the city of San Jose is launching their own program this year, as well as Monterey Bay Community Power down in San Benito, Monterey County, and Santa Cruz County. And then also, it used to be LA Community Choice Energy, but it's launching in LA County as well. So right now, if the way the dominoes are falling, by 2025, I think 80% of electricity customers will be served by a multitude of diverse network of community choice programs. We're not here in the business to kind of monopolize it. We want to have distinct, unique programs that hopefully can fit each region that we're serving.
Thank you.
The other question I have, that's on the comparison that you did for our community. Instead of use two different invoices for a couple of months, is there, why'd you ask for two, or did we just give two?
We supplied a whole year's worth, I think. But that was a lot of data, and we have like 7 or, yeah, maybe like a lot of, we have a lot of PG&E accounts.
Well, I agree.
And I think we also wanted to make sure that they were ready in time for this presentation, and we moved forward pretty quickly with scheduling it. So we wanted to make sure that we had something.
Right. I'm just wondering if we gave you more than two, why you just did two?
Yeah, I think it was a time constraint.
Okay, thank you.
But I think the analysis shows that for those 2 months, you'd save about $6,000, whatever the figure is. And then if you kind of extrapolated that out over the full year for all accounts, you'd save about $35,000. Because it looked like you're spending about $1 million on electricity, so 3.5%, give or take. That's kind of ballparking. Sorry, we had a double header today. We were at the Pittsburgh Historical Museum and entertained a crowd of a good 40 citizens there. So we're working hard.
Well, you're doing a fine job, and thank you for the presentation. Any other questions?
Well, just one clarifying statement. I want to correct the record. There was a presentation given last year, and I believe it was the first half, but it wasn't from MCE. It was about the entire program.
From the county.
That's correct.
I agree.
Okay, and there was no decision or nothing fed back to us.
And no, nobody at that point, do I recall, told us that, oh, by the way, legislation says that you are going to you are in this thing unless you opt out. And that's really a state legislation issue, you know what I'm saying? That's a state legislation. Anyway, I've done enough research, I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
So the only last thing I'd say is that I think the program sounds good, looks good, feels good, but the launch had some hiccups, and how do we recover from that, as a green community? I don't know. I was hoping you had this solution, but not.
Yeah, I mean, we're here to serve you folks, so if there are meetings you'd like us to be at, community events, feel free to email us. We'll be there. We'll help. We'll bring a booth. We'll talk to folks. Again, just to be crystal clear, the enrollment or the transition happens next April based on the metering date. And then, this April, sorry. And then folks have another 60 days to make a decision whether or not this works for them. At no cost, no issue, no nothing. If they decide to wait until July or August, there's a small marginal administrative fee. But that helps with our procurement strategies and our procurement practices to make sure that we know who's going to stay and who's not going to stay. And we respect every decision as much as we love folks opting up to Deep Green. We'll respect anybody who's opting out. So we'll take guidance from you if you want to send us some ideas for us to be in the community in the next 60 days or even longer. Again, we're here to stay. Okay. Open ears.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Very well done. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
I just wanted to add, this was on short notice with about a week and a half. So they were fantastic in trying to get this program together and working with staff. So I wanted to thank them for that.
Mr. Helfrich, I believe you have some comments on E2.
Very interesting presentation. Thank you. As part of your package, you did include the Marin County Civil Grand Jury and their opinion of this program. Now, granted, that's going back to 2009, but I read through it in some of the highlights of that grand jury report. The grand jury has concluded that the cost of the Marin County, what's called the MCE program, remains undefined and the benefits are likely to be minimal. The MEA board would establish rates and policies when they eventually own and operate commercial power generating facilities. The grand jury recommended that the MCE program be abandoned. Their comment was, citizens of Marin are being led down a costly and extremely risky path not yet traveled by any other communities in California. So it sounds like we may have some more history now. All cost incurred by MCE must be borne by the ratepayers. They are the sole source of revenue. In the grand jury report, they stated that the promise rate to meet or beat only applies to year one of phase one. Firm prices for phase one will not be known until the completion of the 90-day review period. So one of my questions was going to be, how long are these rates that are 1 or 2% less going to last? They talked about the burden of choice is placed upon the individual consumer. Residents will be required to respond to the MCE opt-out notification. And just a personal comment. I have a college degree. I got what looked like a bunch of junk mail that I kind of tore open and threw away without really reading this notification. I thought it was, now that I see what it was, it was a horrible presentation. And I am not the kind of person who likes to be told you will do something. And I think this change that says you're in unless you know to opt out is not the way this should be done.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Byzantin, I believe you have some comments on this item.
It looks long. I've got it under 3 minutes, so I will raise the quick question. The Marin Clean Energy, also known as the Community Choice Aggregation Entity, also known as Marin Energy Authority, is a joint powers authority just like the Discovery Bay Joint Powers Authority, meaning all current and future costs incurred by Joint Powers Authority are passed on to its customers without a customer vote and therefore are a risk to the Discovery Bay community, its taxation without representation. For us, community choice aggregation entities are an alternative to PG&E. However, community choice aggregation entities do not produce, transmit, and/or distribute energy and are not responsible for the maintenance and/or repairs and do not repair and distribute electricity consumption bills. Community choice aggregation entities and PG&E buy renewable energy certificates. Renewable energy certificates show the type of energy produced and placed onto the shared energy grid and show who is extracting energy from the shared energy grid. One renewable energy certificate is equal to 1 megawatt hour, the average home's monthly use. Regardless of renewable energy certificates, the shared energy power grid is a mixture of electrons that include conventional power sources, coal, nuclear, oil, and natural gas, renewable energy power sources, large hydro and municipal solid waste, and green energy power sources, wind, solar, biomass, geothermal, biogas, and low-impact hydro. Energy producers fill the shared energy grid with a mixture of electrons, and you and I drain the shared energy grid whenever electricity is used. For us, the Public Utilities Commission regulates the shared energy grid. Community Choice Aggregation Entities, and PG&E's goal is to change the electron mixture in the energy grid by adding more green power electrons and reducing conventional power electrons. There are several California Community Choice Aggregation Entities. Therefore, the CSD may wish to delay their vote until receiving a presentation from each one and PG&E to better understand bundled and unbundled energy, portfolio standards, and portfolio content categories 1, 2, and 3, and buying and selling and trading renewable energy certificates. Renewable energy certificates are marketed pieces of paper to make customers feel good about going green. However, unless you receive 100% of electricity from a source off the shared energy grid, you are receiving mixed electrons. Community choice aggregation entities would not survive if customers were not forced in and must opt out, or if there is a mass opt-out exodus due to high cost increases passed on to customers. Due to high costs, two community choice aggregation entities failed, 2001 and 2014, and reverted electric accounts back to PG&E. You need to understand what's behind the curtain. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate the comments. Any other public comment? Again, thank you for the presentation. There's no action to be taken. Is there action to be taken?
Yes. We'd like to know, have a choice of energy provider. This is the last board meeting before the beginning of April, when MCE takes over. So if you want your energy provider to be MCE, we do nothing, I believe. And if you want your energy provider to be PG&E, we need to proactively opt out on each one of our PG&E accounts.
Discussion from the board?
Yeah, I don't have enough information to see the cost savings. So in other words, just take two months and take a look and, oh wow, we're gonna save $35,000 a year. I don't know if I'm comfortable with that. I think we would need to do something a little more in depth. And I was under the impression that at April 19th it starts, but we had 60 days to make a final decision to opt out. Is that correct?
We are in, I believe it's, we're in April 1st, and we have 60 days to where we can then revert back after April 1st to PG&E through an opt-out, and then after 60 days, if we revert back to PG&E, it's going to be an administrative fee.
Right. Well, barring a complete analysis more than two months, my vote's to opt out at this point.
I tend to agree. I don't think there's enough information for me to feel comfortable bringing on MCE at this time.
I appreciate that. I haven't quite heard a motion yet, but let me just clarify something. At what time could we opt into MCE without any problems? Any time, right?
Confirm with them, but there may be an administrative charge if you opt in at a later date. So if you opt out now, my understanding is from Community Choice Aggregates that you can opt in any given time.
That is absolutely correct. So if you decide to opt out right now, you could enroll in our program at a future date at no expense.
Perfect. That being the case,
I'd make a motion to opt out at this point until I get a further analysis, how long it takes staff to work with MCE or whoever else. Maybe there's other aggregators that are out there that might want to service us. So that then we could have a staff report to actually see the cost savings and then make a more informed decision.
And I'll second that and reiterate what you've said, that I think we need more information. Again, looks good, feels good, just not enough information to go over yet.
Any further discussion by the board?
More data.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion to opt out of MCE at this point indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. That's our option.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, staff. Appreciate it. And I would just say along the same lines as what Director P said, that you know we do need more information. I don't want to take away from other things that we're doing, but there's probably more research that needs to be done to this, as well as the FIT program. We have some land. Maybe there's some ways to to make it beneficial to the town, and we're always looking to save money, but we just don't have enough information at this point, so.
Yeah, and if MCE wants to volunteer some time to assist staff, staff doesn't have a lot of time, so bearing a group of people is here.
We good?
We should say this is all in.
Thank you. Moving on to F, the, hey, Bernie, you're still here.
Mm-hmm.
So, for the month of October, I'm sorry, February, we continue to practice our safe operations. Almost 150,000 hours, which is great for our staff. Safety training, safety on fire and hot works. All monthly reports were submitted on time. All wells evacuated, 46 million gallons to the public. All back T's come back negative on our water samples. We're a reduction around 21% still for the month compared to 2013. Wastewater, well in our parameters, plant very well. You can see there, even get non-detect on our water leaving the plant. No bacteria in the water leaving the plant. Pretty drinkable if you want to come down and have a drink.
right after you. Yeah, okay.
6 months after you.
Yeah. Well, lift stations are running well. The staff did a great job with the work orders and keeping things in well-run conditions and backlog to a minimum. Things are going fairly well. Some questions?
Any questions for Bernie?
One question, Bernie, on the last slide.
Back one?
Back one. So look at the bottom one, work order backlog, the over 30 days. Just a question, it shows five. So if you're doing a great job managing this. But are these five?
Long lead time on parts. Like we got a real part for our solar dryer. It's made, it's a German part, comes out of Germany, 12 to 14 weeks lead time, stuff like that. So one of them is we got to pull a pump, we got to get rid of cranes, we got to schedule that. So things like that. So
that's
long time.
That's what I figured. Thank you.
We're going to knock those down pretty soon.
Oh, yeah, well, you'll see them dropping right off.
Any other comments for Bernie? Again, fine job, Bernie. Thank you.
Thank you
for your presentation. You're more than welcome to hang around for the rest of the meeting if you'd like. moving on to business and action items. G1, staff.
Yes, this is, we're going to open up the public hearing on ordinance number 7. I'm going to turn it over to Council Andy Panasco.
Hello, Andy.
Hello, Board. So this is the second time that the Board has seen this ordinance. So what staff has done in the meantime is we read through it and found there were a few errors, clerical type errors in the ordinance, such as wrong cross-references, and then one inconsistency of days. So the Board has an errata sheet that was distributed to them, and you'll see the 6 changes, the inconsistent days, and the wrong cross-references, and those occurred just as the ordinance was changing over time. So at this point, what staff would recommend to the Board, if the Board is so inclined, is to waive a second reading and to adopt the ordinance as presented with the amended errata incorporated.
Okay.
After you open the public hearing and take comments.
So at this point, we will open the public hearing for ordinance number 7, for ordinance number 7 of the Water Regulations and Service Ordinance. We do have a comment from a card put forward for G1 from Mr. Helfrich. Do you have a comment, sir?
I do. I still believe that the definition in 2.27 is vague and ambiguous. What will be the definition of flooding when you read your definition? It doesn't say whether it's a quarter inch deep, a half inch deep, 1 inch deep, an eighth inch deep. I mean, this is flooding. What constitutes runoff and gutters? Again, is it some gallon per hour flow? Section 17.02, and that provision gives you the right to disconnect anyone if they're in violation of the definition of waterways for 2.27. So it's kind of a circle as far as I'm concerned. Section 22.01 allows the homeowners to have their meter tested at once every 24 months. I think there should be a provision added where the town has to randomly test the accuracy of the meters, not just rely on customers requesting that. Section 31, where you change the days to 3 days and your definition, I think that that's an unreasonable length of time, that you should allow 10 to 15 working days for a response, not 3 working days. I was complaining about the language of the authority of the board and the general manager to be the arbitrator of what's right and what's wrong. And I believe your counsel talked about that there is a California Government Tort Claim Act that a homeowner might be able to avail themselves of if they're unhappy with your response or what your appeal is. I think there should be language in the order or in the ordinance that would direct the homeowner or the property owner to that section so that they know there is another avenue. Section 51.02, again, is vague and ambiguous. Talks about unreasonable use of waste, unreasonable use or waste of water. So the problem I have with that is it's so arbitrary. Does this mean that if you think the landscaping requires an unreasonable use or waste of water, that you can tell us you can't have that landscaping, let it go brown? If you don't, we're going to come in and bulldoze it. I mean, there's all sorts of things that I am worried about. This definition of unreasonable use or waste of water reminds me of what Justice Potter Stewart said about pornography or hardcore. That exactly. I don't know what it is, but when I see it, I'll know what it is. So I think you're opening yourself to that kind of a definition of unusual waste or use of water.
Thank you. Board discussion? Any other public comment? Suggest you close the public hearing and take the action as necessary, unless you have any additional questions of staff.
Any clarifying questions? Hearing none, then we will close the public hearing and
move we adopt ordinance number 7, water regulations and service ordinance.
I'll second that.
With the errata?
Yes.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item G2.
Okay, I'm going to invite Mac up from Parks and Recreation.
Thank you. All right, good evening. Before you are two additions to the 2018 programs, activities, and events whose fees were waived by the general manager upon the funding of public interest that were originally approved at our meeting on February 7th. The first additional request is from the American Red Cross to utilize the community center for a blood drive on a total of 4 separate dates with times from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., with each date for a total rental cost of $600. The second additional request is from the original approved Rat Kids program, which is with the Contra Costa County Sheriff's Department, to expand their hours to include 2 age groups, one for 5 to 7-year-olds and one for 8 to 12-year-olds.
The expansion of this increase will, of the original approved fee waiver of $390, an additional $190 for a total cost of $500. Therefore, staff recommends the acceptance of the additional 2018 programs, activities, and event fee waivers by the general manager for the calendar year 2018. Any questions?
Any questions from the board?
Pretty clear.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Helfer, if you have a comment on G2?
I did. You just keep adding to the deficit of the community center. With that, that brings your fee waivers to what, almost $16,000. Community center is bleeding, and I think you need to find revenue sources. And those are all fine programs that maybe do deserve to have their fee waived, but I think that there's, you're almost getting to the point where you should waive everybody's fee.
Okay. Any further public comment? Okay, hearing none. Is there a motion?
Move staff recommendation.
I'll second.
Move and second it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Item three, staff.
Yes, I'm going to invite Dina up to talk about the notice of completion for the Willow Lake Water Treatment Plant PLC and SCADA upgrade project.
I was going to say, can we wake you up? I think you fell asleep a second ago.
Good evening. The Willow Lake PLC and SCADA project is now finalized. All work required by the contractor, which was Telstar Inc., has been finished. The installation was completed on August of 2017, and all work was approved by the district engineer, Rudolph and Scalini. We are requesting the board approve the notice of completion and authorize the general manager to release the retention for this project.
Thank you. Any clarifying questions for our department head over there? Okay, thank you, Dina. Appreciate that. Any comments from the public? Anybody have a motion to make?
You're going to close public comment.
Public, I'll close public comment. Nobody said anything.
Move staff recommendation.
Thank you very much.
I'll second
that. It's been moved and seconded. Hearing no further discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Informational items, none. Director's reports.
Just a P6 meeting.
Go ahead.
They had a special P6 meeting. They changed, Bob Mankin was the head or the chair, changed over to Leslie Belcher, and she called a meeting so that she could work budget items and come up to speed on her own. It was a long meeting, but would have been just up Bill's alley. It's all numbers and figures and data, so I think it was a good meeting.
Go ahead.
We had a water wastewater treatment meeting and had an update on the item we just passed, and then we have some additional items coming down the road for maintenance. Once we get a handle on those, we'll bring it back to the board and go from there.
Any other? Chris?
I just want to remind everyone on April 28th, there's going to be pause on parade at Discovery Bay Community Center, and so that'll be an event from 9 to 12. Public's invited to come out to this inaugural event for dogs, dog park event, April 28th.
You hear that, Sam? Oh, yeah, he wagged his tail. He's all aboard.
Who's putting that on?
Lions Club.
The town's working in partnership with the Discovery Lions Club.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you, Chris. Manager's report.
Yes, at the last board meeting, it was discussed that one of the future agenda items that I'd like to see is consulting or legal services concerning our maintenance and assessments districts, what can be done in terms of some strategies to help relieve some of the pressure on Zone 8 for some of our community center projects here. And we have found, based on a recommendation from legal, that Harrison Associates as a possible consultant. What we'd like to do is, it's going to take us some, they want to see some paperwork before they can make a recommendation or put together a proposal. So that may take us actually a couple months because we're knee deep in a bunch of other projects. But at that time, we'd like to bring it before the Park and Rec Committee, have them screen this consulting services before we bring it to the board.
Okay, thank you for that. Council?
I had asked a question offline, just want to know if they got back to you.
No.
Council?
Nothing further from me tonight.
Thank you. We have a list of correspondence, future agenda items. Any future agenda items that anybody wants to bring attention to the staff at this point? Hearing none?